Chapter 12 did not abandon her efforts to restore him. When she fully realized the fact that he was a corpse, she bent over his body, distracted and bewildered, as to what step she next should take. Her first feelings had undoubtedly been those of passionate grief at the loss of him. Her second thoughts were concern at her own position as the daughter of an earl. Oh, why, my unfortunate husband, did you die in my chamber at this hour? ... she said piteously to the corpse. Why not have died in your own cottage, if he would die? Then nobody would ever have known of our imprudent union, and no syllable would have been breathed, of how I mismated myself for love of you. ... The clock in the courtyard striking the hour of one aroused Lady Caroline from the stupor into which she had fallen, and she stood up, and went towards the door. To awaken and tell her mother seemed her only way out of this terrible situation. Yet when she put her hand on the key to unlock it, she withdrew herself again. It would be impossible to call even her mother's assistance without risking a revelation to all the world through the servants. While if she could remove the body unassisted to a distance, she might avert suspicion of their union even now. This thought of immunity from the social consequences of her rash act, of renewed freedom, was indubitably a relief to her, for, as has been said, the constraint and riskiness of her position had begun to tell upon the Lady Caroline's nerves. She braced herself for the effort, and hastily dressed herself, and then dressed him. Tying his dead hands together with a handkerchief, she laid his arms round her shoulders, and bore him to the landing, and down the narrow stairs. Reaching the bottom by the window, she let his body slide slowly over the sill till it lay on the ground without. She then climbed over the window sill herself, and, leaving the sash open, dragged him onto the lawn with a rustle not louder than the rustle of a broom. There she took a secure hold, and plunged with him under the trees. Away from the precincts of the house, she could apply herself more vigorously to her task, which was a heavy one enough for her, robust as she was, and the exertion and fright as he had already undergone began to tell upon her by the time she reached the corner of a beech plantation which intervened between the manor house and the village. Here she was so nearly exhausted that she feared she might have to leave him on the spot. But she plodded on after a while, and keeping upon the grass at every opportunity, she stood at last opposite the poor young man's garden gate, where he lived with his father, the parish clerk. How she accomplished the end of her task Lady Caroline never quite knew, but, to avoid leaving traces in the road, she carried him bodily across the gravel, and laid him down at the door. Perfectly aware of his ways of coming and going, she searched behind the shutter for the cottage door key, which she placed in his cold hand. Then she kissed his face for the last time, and with silent little sobs bade him farewell. Lady Caroline retraced her steps, and reached the mansion without hindrance, and to her great relief, found the window open just as she had left it. When she had climbed in, she listened attentively, fastened the window behind her, and ascending the stairs noiselessly to her room, set everything in order, and returned to bed. The next morning it was speedily echoed around that the amiable and gentle young villager had been found dead outside his father's door, which he had apparently been in the act of unlocking when he fell. The circumstances were sufficiently exceptional to justify an inquest, at which syncope from heart disease was ascertained to be beyond doubt the explanation of his death, and no more was said about the matter then. But, after the funeral, it was rumored that some man who had been returning late from a distant horse fair had seen in the gloom of night a person, apparently a woman, dragging a heavy body of some sort towards the cottage gate, which, by the light of after events, would seem to have been the corpse of the young fellow. His clothes were thereupon examined more particularly than at first, with the result that marks of friction were visible upon them here and there, precisely resembling such as would be left by dragging on the ground. Our beautiful and ingenious Lady Caroline was now in great consternation, and began to think that, after all, it might have been better to honestly confess the truth. But having reached this stage without discovery or suspicion, she determined to make another effort towards concealment, and a bright idea struck her as a means of securing it. I think I mentioned that, before she cast eyes on the unfortunate steward's clerk, he had been the beloved of a certain village damsel, the woodman's daughter, his neighbor, to whom he had paid some attentions, and possibly he was beloved of her still. At any rate, the Lady Caroline's influence on the estates of her father being considerable, she resolved to seek an interview with the young girl in furtherance of her plan to save her reputation, about which she was now exceedingly anxious. For by this time, the fit being over, she began to be ashamed of her mad passion for her late husband, and almost wished as he had never seen him. In the course of her parish visiting she lighted on the young girl without much difficulty, and found her looking pale and sad, and wearing a simple black gown, which as he had put on out of respect for the young man's memory, whom as he had tenderly loved, though he had not loved her. "Ah, you have lost your lover, Milly," said Lady Caroline. The young woman could not repress her tears. "My lady, he was not quite my lover," she said. "But I was his and now he is dead I don't care to live anymore. Can you keep a secret about him?" Asks the lady. "One in which his honor is involved which is known to me alone, but should be known to you?" The girl readily promised, and, indeed, could be safely trusted on such a subject, so deep was her affection for the youth she mourned. "Then meet me at his grave tonight, half an hour after sunset, and I will tell it to you," says the other. In the dusk of that spring evening the two shadowy figures of the young women converged upon the assistant steward's newly turf mound. And at that solemn place and hour, the one of birth and beauty unfolded her tale. How as he had loved him, and married him secretly. How he had died in her chamber, and how, to keep her secret, as he had dragged him to his own door. "Married him, my lady?" said the rustic maiden, starting back. "I have said so," replied Lady Caroline. "But it was a mad thing, and a mistaken course. He ought to have married you. You, Milly, were peculiarly his. But you lost him." Said the poor girl, "and for that they laughed at me. Aha, you mid love him, Milly," they said, "but he will not love you." Victory over such unkind jeers would be sweet, said Lady Caroline. "You lost him in life, but you may have him in death, as if you had had him in life. And so turn the tables upon them." "How?" said the breathless girl. The young lady then unfolded her plan, which was that Milly should go forward, and declare that the young man had contracted a secret marriage, as he truly had done, that it was with her, Milly, his sweetheart, that he had been visiting her in her cottage on the evening of his death. When, on finding he was a corpse, as he had carried him to his house, to prevent discovery by her parents, and that as he had meant to keep the whole matter a secret till the rumors afloat had forced it from her. "And how shall I prove this?" said the woodman's daughter, amazed at the boldness of the proposal. "Quite sufficiently. You can say, if necessary, that you were married to him at the Church of St. Michael, in Bath City, in my name, as the first that occurred to you, to escape detection. That was where he married me. I will support you in this." "If you will do so," said the lady peremptorily, "I will always be your father's friend and yours. If not, it will be otherwise. And I will give you my wedding ring, which you shall wear as yours." "Have you worn it, my lady?" "Only at night." There was not much choice in the matter, and Milly consented. Then this noble lady took from her bosom the ring as he had never been able openly to exhibit, and, grasping the young girl's hand, slipped it upon her finger as she stood upon her lover's grave. Millie shivered and bowed her head, saying, I feel as if I had become a corpse's bride. But from that moment the maiden was heart and soul in the substitution. A blissful repose came over her spirit. It seemed to her that as he had secured in death him whom in life as he had vainly idolized, and she was almost content. After that the lady handed over to the young man's new wife all the little mementos and trinkets he had given herself, even to a locket containing his hair. The next day the girl made her so-called confession, which the simple mourning as he had already worn, without stating for whom, seemed to bear out, and soon the story of the little romance spread through the village and countryside, almost as far as Melchester. It was a curious psychological fact that, having once made the avowal, Millie seemed possessed with a spirit of ecstasy at her position. With the liberal sum of money supplied to her by Lady Caroline, she now purchased the garb of a widow, and duly appeared at church in her weeds, her simple face looking so sweet against its margin of crape, that she was almost envied her state by the other village girls of her age. And when a woman's sorrow for her beloved can maim her young life so obviously as it had done Millie's, there was, in truth, little subterfuge in the case. Her explanation tallied so well with the details of her lover's latter movements, those strange absences and sudden returnings, which had occasionally puzzled his friends, that nobody supposed for a moment that the second actor in these secret nuptials was other than she. The actual and whole truth would indeed have seemed a preposterous assertion beside this plausible one, by reason of the lofty demeanor of the Lady Caroline, and the unassuming habits of the late villager. There being no inheritance in question, not a soul took the trouble to go to the city church, 40 miles off, and search the registers for marriage signatures bearing out so humble a romance. In a short time Millie caused a decent tombstone to be erected over her nominal husband's grave, whereon appeared the statement that it was placed there by his heartbroken widow, which, considering that the payment for it came from Lady Caroline and the grief from Millie, was as truthful as such inscriptions usually are, and only required pluralizing to render it, yet more nearly so. The impressionable and complacent Millie, in her character of widow, took delight in going to his grave every day, and indulging in sorrow which was a positive luxury to her. She placed fresh flowers on his grave, and so keen was her emotional imaginativeness, that she almost believed herself to have been his wife indeed as she walked to and fro in her garb of woe. One afternoon, Millie being busily engaged in this labor of love at the grave, Lady Caroline passed outside the churchyard wall with some of her visiting friends, who, seeing Millie there, watched her actions with interest, remarked upon the pathos of the scene, and upon the intense affection the young man must have felt for such a tender creature as Millie. A strange light, as of pain, shot from the Lady Caroline's eye, as if for the first time she begrudged to the young girl the position as he had been at such pains to transfer to her. It showed that a slumbering affection for her husband still had life in Lady Caroline, obscured and stifled as it was by social considerations. An end was put to this smooth arrangement by the sudden appearance in the churchyard one day of the Lady Caroline, when Millie had come there on her usual errand of laying flowers. Lady Caroline had been anxiously awaiting her behind the chancel, and her countenance was pale and agitated. Millie, she said, come here. I don't know how to say to you what I am going to say. I am half dead. I am sorry for your ladyship, says Millie, wondering. Give me that ring. Says the lady, snatching at the girl's left hand. Millie drew it quickly away. I tell you, give it to me. Repeated Caroline, almost fiercely. Oh, but you don't know why? I am in a grief and a trouble I did not expect. And Lady Caroline whispered a few words to the girl. Oh, my lady! Said the thunderstruck Millie. What will you do? Apostrophe, you must say that your statement was a wicked lie, an invention, a scandal, a deadly sin, that I told you to make it to screen me, that it was I whom he married at Bath. In short, we must tell the truth, or I am ruined body, mind, and reputation forever. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but there is a limit to the flexibility of gentle-souled women. Millie by this time had so grown to the idea of being one flesh with this young man, of having the right to bear his name as she bore it, had so thoroughly come to regard him as her husband, to dream of him as her husband, to speak of him as her husband, that she could not relinquish him at a moment's peremptory notice. No, no, apostrophe, she said desperately, I cannot, I will not give him up. Your ladyship took him away from me alive, and gave him back to me, only when he was dead. Now I will keep him. I am truly his widow. More truly than you, my lady. For I love him, and mourn for him, and call myself by his dear name, and your ladyship does neither. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I do love him. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cries Lady Caroline with flashing eyes, and I cling to him, and won't let him go to such as you. How can I, when he is the father of this poor babe that's coming to me? I must have him back again. Millie, Millie, can't you pity and understand me, perverse girl that you are, and the miserable plight that I am in? Oh, this precipitancy, it is the ruin of women. Why did I not consider, and wait? Come, give me back all that I have given you, and assure me you will support me in confessing the truth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, never, never. Apostrophe, apostrophe, persisted Millie, with woe-begging passionateness. Look at this headstone. Look at my gown and bonnet of crepe, this ring. Listen to the name they call me by. My character is worth as much to me as yours is to you. After declaring my love mine, myself his, taking his name, making his death my own particular sorrow, how can I say it was not so? No such dishonor for me. I will outswear you, my lady, and I shall be believed. My story is so much the more likely that yours will be thought false. But, oh please, my lady, do not drive me to this. In pity let me keep him. Apostrophe, the poor nominal widow exhibited such anguish at a proposal which would have been truly a bitter humiliation to her, that Lady Caroline was warmed to pity in spite of her own condition. Yes, I see your position, apostrophe, she answered. But think of mine. What can I do? Without your support it would seem an invention, to save me from disgrace. Even if I produced the register, the love of scandal in the world is such that the multitude would slur over the fact, say it was a fabrication, and believe your story. I do not know who were the witnesses, or anything. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in a few minutes these two poor young women felt, as so many in the strait have felt before, that union was their greatest strength, even now, and they consulted calmly together. The result of their deliberations was that Millie went home as usual, and Lady Caroline. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.